You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard.
When we think of acts of terrorism here on American soil, a few major events come to mind. The first World Trade Center attack, the Oklahoma City bombing, and 9/11. They're all relatively recent events in the course of our country's history, but are widely credited for putting domestic and international terror attacks on Americans' radars and ushering in a new era of security policy.
But according to our next guest, this isn't the first time our country has been through something like this. Only a few decades ago, the country was awash in acts of domestic terrorism, things like bombings, kidnappings, and assassinations at the hands of radical groups like the Weather Underground and the Black Liberation Army. He says this earlier age of terror is an all but forgotten era of American history, and it's one that could provide perspective on how the war on terror is being waged today.
Joining us now is Brian Burrow. He's a special correspondent at Vanity Fair, and he's the author of the book Days of Rage, America's Radical Underground, the FBI, and the Forgotten Age of Revolutionary Violence. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Real pleasure. Thanks.
Well, you tell a lot of stories, surprising, shocking stories sometimes about this 1970s era underground movement. But one of the most amazing things is how thoroughly it's been forgotten in many ways. Why do you think that is?
I wish I knew why. Conservatives will tell you it's because the liberal media doesn't want to write too much about radical extremes of violence. I think it's also possible that as a people, we tend to remember those things that we want to remember. But frankly, I think the best reason is the fact is the most obvious, that is, most of the people who did all these political actions, these crimes, these bombings, for the longest time didn't want to talk about it because they might be prosecuted. And it's really only now, 40 and 45 years later, that many of these people are willing to talk candidly about what happened back then.
Well, give us a sense, big picture, how common were acts of domestic terrorism? How large did they loom in the public mind?
Bombings were an almost commonplace, almost a daily occurrence in the United States during the 1970s, and during the early 1970s, there were more than one a day. The stat that people talk about most often is during an 18-month period in 1971 and 1972, there were 2,500 bombings on U.S. soil. But it's important to emphasize that they were a different type of bombing than those we've experienced in the last 20 years. Today, a bombing may typically mean somebody's going to die. Less than 1% of the bombings in the 1970s led to any type of serious injury or death. By and large, they're what you might call protest bombings, the type of thing where people put a bomb outside a government building late at night and then issue a statement the next morning.
So who were some of the main players? Who are the active underground movements that you focus on?
Well, Days of Rage tells the story of six principal groups, as well as three or four others that were almost as important. By far the most important of these groups was the Weather Underground, which is the first and the largest and the longest lived. They began their underground bombing campaign in January 1970, and it lasted until the group dissolved in 1976. There was also the second group, which was called the Black Liberation Army, which was a violent spinoff of the Black Panthers. They assassinated policemen in a three-year campaign that lasted from 71 to 73. And then there were other groups that people might dimly remember. Perhaps the most determined bombers of the decade was a group called the FALN, which was they wanted independence for Puerto Rico, and they were best known for a bombing on Wall Street of a restaurant in January 1975 that killed four people.
So in the public's mind, I mean, we had these spectacular attacks, these spectacles of 9/11 in Oklahoma City that really captured all of our attention for a long time, the Boston Marathon bombing. Was it like that then? Did people watch this all the time? Was this on people's minds all the time, or was it just part of the scenery in some ways?
It was part of the scenery. When you have two and three bombs going off every week, and many of them not hurting people, it just becomes part of the fabric of daily life. And we need to make clear we're mostly talking about things that happen in New York, in the Bay Area, and somewhat in Chicago. If you lived in rural Wisconsin, this was not part of your daily life. You did not live in fear of this. One of my favorite quotes that I found during the whole decade was in the New York Post, which interviewed a woman who witnessed a bombing by the FALN in 1977, and her quote was, "Oh, another bombing? Who is it this time?"
What was the motivation? I, looking back, we might assume, oh, Vietnam War, that's what led to the protests, that's what would have led to this. You say no, that wasn't really the main issue for these groups.
That's one of the great myths of the period, is that this was anti-war violence. Look, the left-wing militants that led these bombing campaigns in the 1970s were, in fact, violently anti-war. but they related to the war in a purely opportunistic way. They would take recruits who were anti-war, but they were first and foremost about the rights of black Americans. Many of them traced their origins to the civil rights movement, and the Weather Underground, the BLA, groups like the Symbionese Liberation Army, they were first and foremost about defending what they believed was of police violence against blacks, and inevitably their targets were policemen.
Talking to Brian Burrow, author of the book Days of Rage, about an era of radical violence in the United States, late 60s through the 70s, into the early 80s, actually. Brian, you talked to some of the people at the center of the story, radicals, people who made bombs and so on. Are they willing to talk about this now to somebody who's going to write a book about them?
I was surprised how many were, in fact. Several dozen speak for the first time in the book about bombings, about police shootouts, about prison breaks, if you will. Now, for every one that did talk to me, three slammed the door in my face. But there are a lot of people now, either they went to prison and have gotten out, or the statute of limitations on these crimes have passed. They're in their 60s, they're in their 70s, and many of them, I think, are confronting the legacy of what their 25-year-old selves did, and trying to come to grips with it, to terms with it. And when I came along, and I think it, expressed a desire to write a down-the-middle narrative history, not a left-wing history, not a right-wing history, but just a history of what happened, a lot of people saw the value in trying to reclaim memories that I think have mostly been forgotten to most Americans.
So how did they talk about it? I mean, were you hearing regret? Were you hearing pride in what they did? What kind of emotions came out looking back?
I heard a full range of emotions. I heard regret. I heard people who were proud of what they achieved. By and large, what I wanted to get was just the story of what happened, but to the extent that they did look back, I think that the dominant message that I got was it's important for people to understand why these things were done. It's difficult for us after 9/11 to think that anybody that puts off a bomb isn't a terrorist, and many of these people wanted today's Americans to understand the conditions, the corruption of the Nixon administration, the crimes against African Americans, and yes, the Vietnam War, that were legitimate grievances. And the controversial part is that they resorted to violence as a protest.
And there was a frustration with nonviolence, with slow progress, if any, with assassinations like that of Martin Luther King. Is that that frustration part of what spurred them to violence?
Absolutely. By and large, the militants who turned violent in America in 1970 were those who were unable to give up the great dream of 1968, the dream that governments were falling, that it, literally a new world order was coming to pass. And when that didn't happen in 1969, when it didn't happen in 1970, there were a hardcore of radical militants that believed that if this revolution was actually to come, a second American revolution, that they would need to resort to war, in essence, to bring it on. They actually launched a kind of war against America, and it was a war that they ended up losing.
A turning point, you write, to happen here in Wisconsin, the bombing of a building, Sterling Hall, on the UW-Madison campus, University of Wisconsin campus, I think, at the time. How did that fit into all of this?
Well, I was hoping you would bring that up, because that is the one of the most important events, and it did happen there in Wisconsin. It was a bombing of the Math Center there in August 1970, by not an underground group, but a group of local militants, if you will, that drove a stolen Econoline van, a rented Econoline van, up to the Math Center, and it was just a massive explosion, and it killed one man, a father of three. And the impact of that, the social impact, was up until that point, I think most people in the anti-war movement on the left kind of were taken up with the romance of the underground, especially the Weather Underground, that they were, fighting the man, that they were giving it back to him. But it was one thing when they were doing it and not killing anybody. But when an innocent person died, you see the tone, the tenor of news coverage and of interviews with ordinary Americans really start to turn against those who would engage in underground violence. It became a much less popular pursuit after the attack there in Madison.
Briefly, Brian, Should we be looking at these at lessons from this era today in our counterterror efforts now?
I think the main thing that you need to realize today is the conditions that we've seen between blacks and urban police departments in the 9 months since Ferguson sharply parallel back what happened by then, but you're not going to see the type of violence we saw back then, in large part because today's people on the left look back to the 70s and realize violence didn't work.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Brian Burrow, author of Days of Rage, America's Radical Underground, the FBI, and the Forgotten Age of Revolutionary Violence.
I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Farah. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network.